From opening keynote with Brian Stevenson, founder and executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative in Montgomery, Alabama, to closing session with David Sedaris, the best-selling essayist and satirist, the biennial conference of the Public Library Association is both lofty and lighthearted. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. Some 9,000 public libraries and branches dot the American landscape, and librarians there touch the minds and hearts of millions of citizens. Andrew Albanese, senior writer at Publishers Weekly, joins me every week with the very latest news on books and reading, and today he's on the line from Indianapolis, where the PLA conference is underway. Welcome back to Beyond the Book, Andrew.
Greetings, Chris.
Well, indeed, greetings there to you in Indianapolis, where you are at the PLA meeting, and things are already underway there. So what's going on in the nation's heartland?
Well, you know, it wouldn't be a 2014 Library Association conference without a blizzard. And just like we got hit in Philly for ALA Midwinter in January, another storm hit Indianapolis on Wednesday, the opening day of PLA. Of course, the day before was sunny and 70 degrees here, which makes it all the more frustrating. But the good news is that the clouds have parted, the snow has stopped, and actually it's a little bit sunny out here now in Indianapolis. And all in all, it wasn't too bad. I think the bad news is that north of us and into New England, the storm was a lot stronger. So I think a lot of librarians who were coming from the north were stuck at an airport in Cleveland or Chicago. Nevertheless, the PLA opening sessions came off very well, beginning with a one-hour talk from Ann Patchett, author and owner of Parnassus Books. And the opening session with Brian Stevenson was wonderful. One of the best I've ever seen in all my years coming to PLA, over a decade of coming to PLA. He really had spirits high. He really instilled librarians with a feeling of mission, and he got a standing ovation surreptitiously at the end of his talk, which was something that we don't often see at these meetings. So far, a good start to the PLA, and you can read all about it in Monday's issue of PW.
Well, apart from the inspiration, there's also been some information. The Pew Foundation is releasing a new report looking at the state of U.S. libraries, and you've seen that report. What kind of insight does it offer?
Yeah, that's right, and you know, perfectly timed for release at PLA. This report is drawn from the most recent Pew survey, which we reported on in January, and it features the long-awaited marketing typology report on Americans' library usage. Now, Pew had reported that last year that they were going to be doing this, and at long last, here it is. It will be released at noon Friday today, and you can check that out. Check it out on the PW website for a full rundown of what's in the report. But you know, I don't think I'll be giving away too many secrets if I share a little bit about what's in the report and its major theme, which basically breaks down users of libraries into groups. And again, there's good news. There are two large cohorts that are represented in the typology. They are labeled library lovers, and they represent about 10% of those in the survey. And then there's information omnivores, which make up another 20%. So that's about, you know, 30% or a third of Americans represented who are big fans of libraries. Then there's another 30% of what Pew labels the solid center. And these are people who may not use library services as regularly as the other 30% I just mentioned, but who nevertheless value libraries, even if they're not, you know, in them every day. And then it's all downhill from there. You know, you have a number of low engagement groups, such as the Not For Me group. You have the Rooted and Roadblocked. You have the groups called Distant Admirers and Off the Grid. And I'll leave it to your imagination what off the grid means. Now, you know, beyond the colorful names, those last groups, the less engaged, are actually very important. And I think Pew has done a really great service in creating these typologies because they really should benefit libraries as they seek to market their services. And I'll tell you, it's a big topic here in Indianapolis at PLA, how you market your library services. So I think it really helps to know who you're marketing to if you want to market effectively.
Right. And, you know, helping librarians market is something everybody can kind of offer a boost on our Facebook page for Beyond the Book. We just shared a little photo illustration that had a great quote from Neil Gaiman, who said something like this, that, you know, Google can give you 100,000 answers and a librarian can direct you to the one right place to be. And I think that's the key difference.
Ah, well played. And, you know, anytime you can get Neil Gaiman talking about libraries, good stuff.
Well, indeed. And we've also got some other library-ish topic to bring up here. We've got PW's annual Facts and Figures issue coming out this week. And tell us a little bit more about that.
always one of my favorite issues as we look at sort of the various numbers from the available industry data of 2013. I will direct you to the PW site to check this out. But notably, I'll say this, though, in 2013, there was only one fiction writer to crack a million print copies sold, and that was, drumroll please, Dan Brown with Inferno, published by the good folks at Doubleday. He ultimately sold 1.7 million copies. Stephen King narrowly missed. He came in second with 942 million copies of Dr. Sleep sold. And Doubleday hit the tops again with John Grisham. His book Sycamore Row sold over 900,000 copies as well. So Doubleday came home with two of the top three fiction spots in 2013. On the nonfiction side, it's a little more interesting. There were actually three books that sold over a million copies on the nonfiction side, and two of them were Duck Dynasty books. The top spot went to Bill O'Reilly and Martin Dugard for Killing Jesus. And then you have Happy, 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 My Life and Legacy as the Duck Commander by Phil Anderson, and Cytology, Tales and Wisdom from Duck Dynasty's Favorite Uncle. In fact, three of the top seven books were related to on the nonfiction side were related to Duck Dynasty. So I don't know what we make of that, but there it is. Duck Dynasty leading the stats, and you can check out the full report in Monday's issue and on the PW website.
Well, indeed, you know, at Houghton Mifflin, they used to say the monkey pays the bills, and I suppose for the Duck Dynasty publisher, it's the ducks pay the bills.
I guess so, yeah.
Well, we wouldn't have a podcast with Andrew Albanese if we didn't talk about the Apple trial going on, and there has been some movement there this week as well, and last week we talked about various summary judgment filings. This week, we saw the final scheduled round of briefs that are coming before the damages trial. So I guess the question for you today, Andrew, is, has your thinking changed about whether we'll actually see a damages trial?
Yeah, you know, it has a little bit. You know, as you note, the final schedule briefs were submitted this week, and in them, the plaintiffs, who think Apple should pony up about $840 million in damages, make a pretty persuasive case that there really is no need for a damages trial. And they have a point, and for a few reasons. You know, first, because Apple seems, in its filings, intent on trying to relitigate the fact findings at its from its liability trial at its damages trial. And Judge Cote really does seem to have had about enough of that. Apple is liable in her mind for price fixing. And now we're really just talking about how much they should pay to resolve the damages part of this. So rather than have Apple try to continue to push its case on the liability side, you know, why not just get it off your plate and let the appeals court sort it out? Clearly, Judge Cote is not going to backtrack at all on her main ruling from last July. She believes Apple is liable. And second, you know, the damages trial is going to hinge entirely on expert testimony. And that expert testimony has already been submitted. Now, this is where the real action is in this trial. It's still pending admission. The judge is going to decide, you know, what is admissible and what's not. And each side has objected to the other's experts. But still, you know, she's probably going to let all of it into evidence. So there's not much new there, really. So I think, you know, we have a better chance now of seeing a summary judgment ruling after Judge Cote decides on class certification and other the pending admission of evidence. And one final thing, too, that I'll observe is, you know, as expected, the plaintiffs also rejected Apple's attempt to have the case move back to its original jurisdictions. They argued that Apple, by its actions and in its explicit conversations, had consented to a joint trial. And I think that's probably right at this late stage. I really don't see Cote giving up the case anyway, as it would represent a huge waste of judicial resources at this point. So if there is a trial, and I think the chances are a little bit greater that there may not be, that we will see a summary judgment, nevertheless, if there is, I expect that trial is going to be right here in New York and will save me a trip to Texas or Northern California.
Well, and I'm sure you're not unhappy about that. You get to stay home and see your family a little bit more.
Exactly. You know, though I do love Texas and I do love Northern California, you know, it would be much easier for me to handle it from my usual spot in the front row here in Manhattan.
Indeed. Well, Andrew Albanese, senior writer for Publishers Weekly, joins us every week for the wrap-up of the latest news in the book business. And Andrew, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.